Saints. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. We're going to proceed with our 11:30 report on the recent meetings of the NRCC and CCC. Tom and I are going to tag team these two reports. And I think it'd probably be easiest if we do one at a time. The NRCC met at the end of April outside of Baltimore. The agenda summary, some of which Jim Weinberg referred to, was a stock assessment TORs, implementing an assessment prioritization process, the stock assessment process documentation, 2014 and 2015 scheduling, Atlantic offshore herring sampling, climate change, and some other miscellaneous business issues. For those of you who are not familiar with this process, the NRCC are the chairs and vice chairs of the two of the New England and the Mid-Atlantic Council. The Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission participates, the Science Center, and GARFO. Concerning of interest to this council and is concerning the ASMSC Atlantic Herring Study Proposal for Area 3. There's been correspondence that has gone back and forth between the commission and this council concerning spawning areas in Area 3. The NRCC discussed this in some detail and tasked the Science Center to review the research study proposal and report back to the NRCC at the midterm call, which is scheduled in end of July, so we should be able to have a report in time for at least the commission's meeting. Climate change. Many of us went to the climate workshop earlier this year. The final report still is not out. It's expected to be out sometime this summer. And the NRCC is deferring to next steps until after the on climate change and discussion on governance until after the final report is available. The intent is to continue discussion at the fall NRCC meeting. The NRCC also discussed potential involvement in observer prioritization and tasked a working group to convene to examine if and how the NRCC should have a role in observer prioritization. I'm going to pass a baton to Tom, and we'll see if between the two of us we can, and with Chairman Robbins' help, just have a discussion on the and Jim Weinberg's help. A discussion and presentation on the assessment issues.
So the first thing I'm going to talk about is a number of us, Michael Ruccio at the regional office and me, and I think some other people have received some questions about some policies that are under development at the NRCC. To bring everybody up to a little bit of speed on it, there are two policies that the NRCC is working on. Both are related to the assessment process. The first I'm going to refer to is what I would call a stock assessment or SAW working group participation policy. And the second document that I'll talk about, neither of which are in your binders because they're still in a draft form, is a policy on the public comments during the final SARC meeting. So starting with the first one, the SAW working group participation, for every assessment, working groups meet together in a series of meetings before the final meeting, which is the SARC meeting, the Stock Assessment Review Committee meeting. And the working groups generally break down into three meetings, one talking about data, one talking about models, sometimes a third called talking about reference points, but the reality is that the models and the reference points tend to get discussed at the same meeting. And there, over the years, the membership of these working groups has not been well defined as to who is actually on the working group, and if the working groups try and achieve a consensus, but at some point, at some meetings, there's a need to make a decision. about model assumptions, which particular model to use, what sort of data that goes into the model. And so it's been rather unclear as to who actually participates in those decisions, because we've never really defined who is a member of the working group. And the approach in the past has pretty much been anybody who walks in the room and is in the room when a decision is made is a member of the working group. This has caused some issues at a number of the working group meetings. There's some question about shouldn't the people involved in making decisions on stock assessments have some sort of qualifications to be commenting on stock assessments and understanding the models and that type of thing. So the NRCC has been working for probably almost a year now, right, on developing a policy on SAW working group participation, and we think we're relatively close to it. And so this establishes a process whereby members would be identified for a working group. There would be a defined number. They'd be clearly identified, and those people would be the ones who, when we have to make decisions and have to make recommendations to the SARC, they're the ones whose opinion matters. Everything is still under development, but I would point out that there's a couple things here. The first is that membership on the working group will be identified, but we are envisioning a role for the councils, the regional office, and the science center in identifying who are the participants on the working group. So this is not, the policy is not coming out saying, okay, you know, somebody down at the science center decides up or down on who is on the working group. There's been some rumors circulating that there are provisions in here that would prevent industry participation in the working groups. That is, at present anyway, not accurate. Industry members could be assigned as members of the working group. In addition, while the working group is identified, that doesn't mean that somebody else who may not be on the working group cannot come into the room and present information or models for consideration by the working group. This would still be an open process at the working group level. So other folks could come in and present a model whether or not you're actually a formal member of the working group and develop working papers. So we're trying to smooth out this policy. One of the thorny issues that we wrestled with, I think, was trying to figure out what sort of conflict of interest provisions might apply to this. And that led to a lot of discussion. And I think, as I recall, the latest version really doesn't address the conflict of interest problem. It was sort of an issue that we wrestled with. How do you identify whether somebody has a conflict of interest or not? So that's the one policy. The next one is the Stock Assessment Review Committee meeting public comment policy. The SARC is the meeting where the peer reviewers come in, the working group presents the assessment model and results, and the peer reviewers review the model. And there really hasn't been any kind of structure to that meeting as to when public comments are taken or what sort of public comments are allowed. And so we're trying to define in a better way how public comments will be held at these SARC meetings. This is an issue because quite often the SARC has a difficult time getting all their work done because they're reviewing two, sometimes three assessments in a one-week period. And so there has to be a little bit more structure to the meetings. Typically, the chair of the SARC, we usually supply an SSC member, as does the MID when it's a stock related to the Mid-Atlantic. But sometimes there can be different approaches on how to take public comments depending on who the particular chair is at the meeting. And so we're hoping that this will provide a little bit more formal structure to the comment periods at the meeting. And will also help the SARC complete its work and still get the public comments. We're hoping to work on those over the summer. The NRCC typically has a meeting in the fall and a meeting in the spring. We sometimes have a conference call about halfway between those two meetings. I don't know if we actually got a date for the conference call yet, but we're hoping to get some of this stuff reviewed by the conference call.
21st of July.
21st of July. That, I believe, is after the Gulf of Maine haddock and scallop stock assessments in July, right? Yes. So I'm not sure that either of these policies will be in place for the SARC meeting, which will be held this July. I suppose it's at least possible the public comment period would be, but the working group participants part probably will not be in effect by that meeting. So that's the two policies. And then I, if there are any questions on those, which are still under development, then I will move on and talk a little bit about assessment prioritization, which attracted a lot of discussion this morning, and Terry said we'd defer till this afternoon. So here we are.
Questions for Tom?
Mike has got one.
Mary Beth? Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question, Tom. As these policies are developed, do they come before the council for any review and comment before they're approved or implemented?
That's a good question. I'm going to say no.
I guess I would just say I'm not sure that's a good outcome.
Mike?
Yeah, that hadn't been the question I was going to ask, but I do think there is a broad issue as to what the role of people are when they represent the council in various functions that we might more generally discuss. And I actually intended to raise that about the one situation I'm in, but I think it has broad applicability. I didn't really have a question for Tom, but I wanted to comment. He raised the point about potentially having some sort of rules about conflict of interest among members of the working group, and basically indicated that at this stage there was no action on that. It was just left the way it is now, I guess. I would just comment that I think that's the right outcome at this stage. While it's very appealing to have various rules to avoid conflict of interest, I think at this stage, in the way the process lays right now, they would be seen, in fact, as trying to stifle some voices, and I don't think that would be a helpful outcome at all. So I think the NRCC, while this is a tough issue, has probably come down in the right place on that one. Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the issues that have been just briefed? Seeing none, back to you, Tom.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about assessment prioritization that is handled at the NRCC meeting, and I just want to caution that with respect to those prioritization meetings, I'm kind of the newbie in the room, so Jim, who has been to far more NRCC meetings than I have, may want to weigh in when I get way off base on how things currently happen, and then I'll disagree with him and say he's wrong. But in any case, it might need a little bit of help. So one of the big things that the NRCC does, the Northeast Region Coordinating Council, is we try and discuss and schedule and plan for the stock assessments that are performed to support the management bodies. You have to remember that there's three, arguably maybe four, management bodies at concern here, New England Council, Mid-Atlantic Council, and the ASMFC. In the case of some stocks that perhaps are managed by the agency, the Science Center may get sucked into those as well. So you can say there's four management bodies that are serviced by the Science Center. And so a big part of the NRCC meetings is trying to reconcile the manager's request for stock assessments with the agency's resources. So currently what happens, I can speak to how New England does it anyway, we, meaning I, sit down with Chris and with the staff in advance of an NRCC meeting, and we try and identify, the starting point is always, which stocks do we need ACLs for and when do we need them? Because this has a strong bearing on the assessment cycle that we try to argue for. As an example, this might be slightly off, but I think it's right. We need to set herring ACLs sometime in 2015, and so we're planning a herring stock assessment for in the spring, I believe, of 2015, so that we can hopefully get an ACL in place by the start of the fishing year in 2016, if I have my years right. But this tends to be a starting point. We walk in the room with our priorities and our desires, and then, of course, the Mid-Atlantic does the same thing, and the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission does the same thing. And so then we try and negotiate and figure out when things can be done. There are a couple things that you need to be aware of that are an issue. One is the availability of data, which can have a big influence on the timing of assessments. Depending on the type of assessment, many of our assessments are analytic assessments. We need age-specific data or age data, both from the survey and from the fishing catch. And there are a couple things that play into that. We like to get survey information, the most recent survey information we can get, which if possible. We like to get the spring survey information when we're doing assessments sometime that year. We like to get the catch information from the year before, the most immediate year before. And this bluntly takes time, and I don't think the time's getting any shorter, though we may get some disagreement from Jim on that. We typically try and get the catch information aged and ready to go by long about April. That date is rarely met. I think this year the aged catch information wasn't available until May or perhaps into the middle of May. And the survey, we have some issues with the survey as well because, as Jim pointed out, the spring survey wasn't completed until after the 1st of June this year. So that creates a problem. That's a little bit unusual. Usually it's done a little earlier than that. But the Bigelow survey is actually longer, I believe. It's 2 weeks longer than the Albatross survey was, so that has extended the time that the availability that the survey information is in there. So that's a constraint on how early you can do an assessment unless you're willing to accept not having the most recent year of information in your assessment, which a number of people were arguing earlier this afternoon that they want the most recent information possible. So this is kind of what, to use a specific example, this is kind of what is playing out next year with the operational assessments for groundfish. We initially walked into the NRCC, the chair walked into the NRCC last fall or spring when we first started talking about the 2015 schedule. And one of the things we argued for was to try and do the groundfish assessments in, let's say, early spring, February of 2015. The problem with that is if you do the assessments then, you're only going to have data through 2013. You're not going to have any of the 2014 data. You're not going to have the 2015 spring survey. This means you're already using data that's, what, 3 years old for the 2016 catch advice. So this was viewed as problematic, in particularly by the center. The center came back and said, well, we would like to do the groundfish assessment updates in the fall so we can use the most recent year of data. This is going to cause us some problems in the management cycle that we need to get with the region to work out on. You'll hear more about that. But the other thing that plays into this is there have been, as I pointed out, these are negotiated things. Okay, so last year, the Science Center came to us and said, we have an empirical approach for George's Bank yellowtail flounder. We would like to pursue that in the spring of 2014, so it's available for the track of 2014. However, there's a conflict with other things we plan to do, which includes the scallop dredge survey review. If you want us to do the, you have to make a choice, Council, between the George's Yellowtail empirical assessment and the scallop dredge survey. So we did make a choice. We chose the George's Yellowtail empirical assessment, which pushes the scallop dredge survey back till next spring, which, you know, causes issues for the, well, it doesn't cause issues, but that means that that's something that we're having done in the spring because that's when we wanted it done because we wanted the George's Bank empirical assessment done. We also basically effected a trade through the good graces of the Mid-Atlantic Council where we moved our Gulf of Maine haddock assessment to this year, when it a benchmark assessment to this year when it was originally planned for next year. In return, I think it was their black sea bass assessment, if I remember right, that got bumped a year.
Bluefish,
I'm sorry. Their bluefish assessment that got bumped a year. So now, you know, the Mid is saying, okay, we pushed this off a year. It's time for our bluefish assessment next year. So all I'm trying to illustrate here is that there are a lot of moving pieces that go into this assessment prioritization, and this is what we try and wrestle with. We always walk in the room trying to get the best deal we can. I hate to say that as a way, but that's kind of what it amounts to. We try and negotiate these things. The other pieces that are in there, I think, is that we have, and I haven't talked at all about a process that we've been working towards over a number of years to try and have two tracks of assessments, a research track and an operational track, which we're not at yet, but we've talked about at this council before. But we're at a stage now where we have what are called benchmark assessments and we have what are called operational updates. And, you know, an operational, a benchmark assessment, you and sort of throw everything out and start from scratch and consider new models, consider new data sources, and you review everything, you evaluate the reference points. They tend to be a longer, more involved process. They have a SARC at the end of them. An operational assessment, on the other hand, takes a benchmark assessment and applies it with new data, new catch streams, new survey streams. It may make some minor changes to the formulation of the model, but those are relatively constrained. The review panel is not a SARC with CIE reviewers. The review panels tend to be our SSC members that we select and put on the review panel. So it's streamlined report, a little bit more streamlined process. I think the center is moving to the idea that benchmarks really only make sense when you have information or have ideas or knowledge on how the assessment model should be changed. And absent that, it really makes more sense to try and do an operational update, which is what we're doing. So we have a number of stocks in New England. I can rattle off most of them in groundfish that have not actually had a benchmark since 2008. I'm going to draw a blank. Georges Bank haddock, redfish, the windowpane flounders, ocean pout, Atlantic halibut, Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine, yellowtail flounder. I think there's another one. Which flounder in place? The ones that we talked about this morning. None of those have had a benchmark assessment since the GARM 3 assessments back in 2008. And we argued that we need to get those on the agenda for the future as soon as we can. That is not going to happen in 2015. The question of whether that's going to happen in 2016 or not, I think, is still an open question that has not been completely resolved by the NRCC. That's how our assessment process works now. Now, if you recall from the April Council meeting, as part of the SSC report, there was a discussion of an assessment prioritization process that is under development at NOAA headquarters, which would consider a number of factors to try and help provide guidance on when assessment should be completed. And the agency received a number of comments in that prioritization process. I don't know if Jim has any idea when it's actually going to be rolled out. They are working on incorporating those comments into the process. One of our comments was that they had this marvelous prioritization system, and nowhere in it did it say that you need to consider the needs of managers when you do assessments. So it'll be interesting to see if they address what we felt was a shortcoming in the prioritization process when the final version comes out. Now, all along so far, we've been told that this prioritization process is intended to be a tool to help people like the NRCC work on assessment prioritization. And it's not intended to be a rigorous, this is exactly the cycle you follow. But we not just us, but all the councils are keeping a close eye on that because they don't really want headquarters dictating exactly what the assessment cycle is going to look like. I can try and answer questions, and I'm sure Jim can answer all of them, so we'll turn to him.
Terry.
So I guess maybe this question would be more geared towards Jim, because Jim had said this morning that they can't assess everything all the time, which I understand wholeheartedly. But you also said that maybe we should pursue different management measures. And I'm just kind of curious because it seems like we manage by the ACL, so how would we come up with a different ACL to manage by without a new assessment? Just curious where you could go for that.
Yeah, I don't have a specific answer for you. I was just thinking that I know from asking for a new assessment always may not give you, that might not be the best way. And I'm trying to think of other ways that we can use resources to get a solution rather than always asking for a stock assessment. So I guess I would look to the expertise around the table to see if there are ways that things could be handled without an additional stock assessment, because you know that better than I do. But if you require an assessment to make any change, then maybe it's pretty restrictive, and we should think about that as well.
Follow up, Terry.
Well, follow up.
Well, yeah, I did take the bait. I guess it's not just a question of the managers figuring out how they can set an ACL without a stock assessment. I don't know. My memory is very clear that a few years ago we were prepared to set ACLs based on a projection forward from a stock assessment that was several years old. And our science and statistical committee turned to us and said, you guys may be willing to do that, but we are not. We are not going to establish an ABC based on a projection off a stock assessment that's 4 or 5 years old. So, it's not just a question of the managers figuring it out. This relates to one of Tom Dempsey's questions this morning, and that is that is there a way that we can set catch advice without having a full-fledged assessment? And I think the short answer is yes, there are ways that you can do that. We have to figure out which ones might work in New England. I would point out that I'm sure you remember it, Jim. It was probably about 4 or 5 years ago that the NRCC started exploring, I forget what the catchphrase was at the time, whether it was signposts or flags or anyways, what we were talking about. But, you know, the NRCC was prompted by the Science Center, was proposed starting to move forward on ways that we could set catch where we would use survey information from the survey in order to figure out whether we needed to adjust our catch advice. And quite honestly, at the time, everybody, particularly from New England, who was in the room said, are you kidding me? We don't trust the surveys at all. We don't want to use the surveys to set catch advice. Now, it could be that attitudes have changed over time, and there may be other techniques, but it is something that we've looked at, and this would probably take close work with the SSC to make sure they're comfortable with using whatever approach we've got for setting ABCs.
Terry.
Yeah, I heard what Tom said about the new information. I say the new information is that we're catching 100% of the ACL. That's new information. And, you know, normally I don't think we would do that because, especially in the sector system, we shouldn't ever catch more than 70 or 80% of an ACL because of choke starts. You know what I mean? So I think if we're catching 100% of something, I think that's pretty good evidence that we may have something going on up there. I mean, we said it last year with Gulf of Maine haddock. I think that's new information and it deserves a look. But
Tom,
thanks. And I was actually pretty happy to hear that Tom say earlier that there's something in the works that we hopefully can work hard on over the course of the year and try to get around this issue. It doesn't seem like we're going to get a different answer with regards to the feasibility of doing 39 full assessments. So, you know, whatever those filters are, whether it's catching 100%, catching, you know, a very low proportion of the quota, you know, the status of the stock, or the, as Maggie said earlier, I think the importance of that stock to a range of fisheries, I think those are all, you know, filters that could be considered. And then also, you know, the time since the last full assessment, I think that has to be factored in too. Just to either perhaps Tom or Jim, is there an updated survey schedule that includes both when the last year of the most recent survey for all our stocks was and the next year, if it is scheduled, when it's projected to be scheduled? I've seen that somewhere. I don't have a revised version following the NRCC discussion.
Jim.
Yeah, thank you. Tom, there on our SOSARC website, if you type that in and then you go to the general information box that's right in the middle of the homepage under the SOSARC, there are some tables that you can click on. And one is an Excel table that shows the history of assessments through time for all the stocks. And then there's another one that has the assessment schedule for about the last 3 years going up to the present and looking ahead a little bit. So that shows the latest conclusions from the most recent NRCC meeting. And we update that after each of the NRCC meetings. And this morning I was one of the things I wanted to say is there's an species information system which NOAA has nationally, and if you go to I can help anyone find this site, but it basically has all the stock assessment information entered into it, and this is a national database. There's a public portal for the public to access, and you don't need a password. And when you get into it, you'll see a list of all of your stocks, and you can look at stocks from the Southwest or the Northwest or anywhere in the country and click on it and get a lot of stock assessment information. So it's all out there and available to you. So if you're interested in finding out about a particular stock based on the most recent update or assessment, it is available.
Tom?
Just to follow up, I tried to get on that site and pull that Excel file, and I think that would be handy to have in front of us every time we talk about what the schedule is going to be. You know, I'm looking at the halibut stock assessment. We haven't assessed that in a while, and if I heard right, that's not going to be assessed for a couple more years. That stock has increased. I mean, it's not the good old days, but it's definitely increased, and we're going to trip over that ACL every single year until we get another assessment. So, and we have things in both directions there. So, I think it would be helpful, just to have that in front of us. Last assessments, next assessments, as we talk about the schedule coming forward.
Jim.
Oh, one other a response to another comment that I heard having to do with what can we do short of doing a stock assessment that would still be useful to the council. And I'd like to point out that the Mid-Atlantic Council has moved in a direction towards requesting data updates from us on most of their stocks annually. And we update the catch information and the survey information, and we work with their staff to interpret it. And if they see indications that things have gone outside of the lanes into what they're calling a rumble strip area, then a closer look is warranted. But that's what the other council is doing instead of going for the full update or the benchmark. And so that's something to explore. Of course, that approach doesn't always work, and we've made a lot of efforts to try to do that with some of the New England groundfish, and the early attempts at it didn't give us a lot of faith that we could do that easily. So anyway, it's something to continue to explore.
Tom?
So you'd be willing to do that every year for our 39 stocks?
Doug.
Yeah, I think I see the Science Center and the NRCC is doing the best with the resources that they have. You know, there's we do need more frequent stock assessment updates, not necessarily a full-blown benchmark assessment. Those are good too, but we need to have them as frequently as possible because we're dealing with allowable catch limits right now. We have quotas, and it's become apparent, and I think our executive director said this even before he became an executive director, that the projection methods just don't seem to be working for groundfish very well on many of the stocks. And we're coming up with situations like the last haddock assessment where we didn't have a stock that was overfished or overfishing, and then we stayed within the allowable catch limits, and then things changed in that assessment. Now we've gone a number of years since then, and we were seeing different indications of potential increases in abundance, both from the surveys that are done, the fisheries independent surveys, and some of the catches. And yet we had to set some ACLs that are very restrictive, and there's a potential, and I don't know the final results, that things may have changed, that where we have a much better resource than we thought. Going three or four 4 or 5 years without an assessment under this management system is just not something we can afford to do right now, either from a standpoint of lost fishing opportunities or from a standpoint of overfishing a stock for a couple years before we find out that we actually are overfishing. And so I think you're working on trying to provide us with more frequent information, and anything we can do, either from getting you more resources to do it or ways to be more efficient, we do need to have at least updates of the assessments.
David.
Yeah, this discussion has been useful, and I suggest we're going to get into it again when we get to our 4 o'clock agenda item relative to the Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization, the Senate version, where there is much text within that version that relates to stock assessments, improving science. So much of what we discussed so far would be rendered moot by this version of reauthorization. And I suspect that when it comes time for us to submit comments on this version, once again, we'll get back to this discussion and highlight the need for timely information on assessments. And frankly, the language in the Senate version is quite prescriptive, and I suspect will cause a tremendous amount of grief for the Northeast Fishery Science Center if it was to move forward and be adopted as is. So I'm assuming the Science Center in particular is going to have some voice in this critique, because this version just reeks of the need for improved science.
Okay, I've got Mike, John Bullard, and Mary Beth, and then we're going to move on to CCC so we have a chance to get into the 4 o'clock agenda item.
Yeah, this is a very tough dilemma that everybody involved in this situation faces, from the fishing industry, the council, the science center, and so forth. And unfortunately, I actually, it's not a surprise. I mean, there were well-documented descriptions in the literature of the information demands that went with TAC management as opposed to other types of management as long as 20, 30, 40 years ago. And as we disaggregate and make it more and more complex with TACs and more sectors and seasons and add on a whole bunch of other things, these problems just accumulate in terms of what's being expected of the system. And at some stage, I don't necessarily agree with either of the congressional versions, but at some stage there has to be some really systematic thinking about how you create a system that actually is feasible within realistic resource limits, and I don't think we're there. That's sort of the scary part of my comment. On the positive side, the SSC and various places within the council system, we've been talking about management strategy evaluation, and we've mostly been talking about it in the context of looking at harvest control rules, which would still be fed by what would hopefully be an up-to-date stock assessment. There are places in the world where management strategy evaluation is applied to what are called management procedures that don't require a stock assessment. They are akin to the sort of thing that Jim was talking about, and I guess Tom mentioned about using various data inputs without going through the intermediate step of a stock assessment. And while there's been a lot of skepticism about how they perform and reasons that we haven't pursued them, I don't think those methods have ever been really subjected in this region to the management strategy evaluations that might show, in fact, they perform quite reasonably. And I think we do need to pursue that.
John.
There was an interesting presentation at the last NRCC meeting by Paul Rego, and who had looked at the way the Science Center in Alaska worked, and he brought it up because of the commitment, I think, that Dr. Karp and the staff at the Science Center have in the face of more and more demands by all of us with fixed or diminished resources, and how that causes systems to break down. And so we see this as one example of this is the empirical approach on yellowtail. I think that the Science Center is willing to look at different ways of doing things, and they have to. And we have listened to Dr. Carpen on, you know, he has to be at the science board, so he can't be here. Paul Rago gave us a brief but illuminating look at how in Alaska they do 50 stock assessments in 6 months, and as he said, work their tails off for 6 months and have 6 months to do science, and morale is high. And he used that as an example of how, and I know everything's different, conditions are different, all that is different, but it was as a way to say there are different ways of doing things. And one of its points was that NEPA documentation is like one-tenth of what ours is. And so Mike and our NEPA folks are looking at, well, it's the same NEPA law. How can we examine how things could be different on the management end? But we place more and more demands, and yet there aren't more and more resources. And we have heard Dr. Karp mention that on more than one occasion. So there's a contradictory message, and life is full of contradictions. One of the messages is there can be and has to be very different ways of doing things, whether it's rumble strips or whatnot, different tools that can lead to dramatic increases in the kinds of information we need, whether it's going from 25 to 50, whatnot. We have to search these out, and I think the Science Center has demonstrated a commitment to search out those kind of tools. And the other contradictory message on the other side of that is that there is a kind of undeniable limit on resources, and it frustrates me. It frustrates this council, it frustrates the MID, and I'm sure more than anyone else, it frustrates the Science Center. I know that they don't like saying no to our requests for more observers, for more timely stock assessments. I'm sure they don't like saying no to all of those requests. So those are the contradictory messages that come out. As I say, life is full of
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quickly, because I know we're running late, but to that NEPA documentation, the North Pacific has a programmatic EIS, which gives them the ability to not do a full EIS every time. And I brought this up several years ago, and the answer I got at the time was, you know, management here is too complicated. I don't think that's so, and I think it would be worth looking at. The problem with that is it's a pretty heavy lift at the onset to go in that direction. But I think we should look at it. I think we should also look at management strategy evaluation, as Dr. Sissonwine pointed out, because I think there's value to that, although I'm not sure that we're all clear on exactly about what that means. And so we could use some examples and maybe run some exercises. And then the last point I would just make, and maybe something to think about, because I know Tom has mentioned it many, many times about, you know, being able to sync up the assessments that we have with the timing of our management and the difficulty, and using old data, you know, doing an assessment and using two-year-old data and then projecting out 3 years is not ideal, and everybody's very unhappy about that. So I wonder if the council might consider just taking a look at, you know, how you get there. You know, what changes would we have to make? Do we have to change fishing years? Is it, you know, for all of our FMPs or some, and how complicated that might be.
Okay. We're going to move on to a CCC overview. The Council Coordination Committee is comprised of the chairs, the executive directors of all eight fishery management councils, the RAs, and a variety of NOAA staff. Meets twice a year on a broad range of issues common to every region. Budget's always on the agenda, and recently the Magnuson reauthorization has been on at least the last three agenda items. You can imagine that given the diversity of the opinions of all eight different regions, it's a pretty tough group of cats to herd. This last meeting in May in Virginia Beach, issues of importance to, I mean, there are a number of issues. There's always reports from each regional council. The agenda also included NOAA structure in relationship to the council's budget, habitat, MSA reauthorization, allocation of working group report, bycatch, climate change, and fisheries enforcement. And Tom and I are going to tag team like we just did with NRCC. Much of the time and much of the meeting was spent on the Magnuson reauthorization. Prior to the CC meeting, their working groups met to try to come up with some draft discussion documents for the CCC to seek some common positions. But the very diverse opinions on overfishing and revealing timelines. And as a result, the CCC comments that are being drafted are really at the 30,000-foot level. The one thing the CCC had a consistent belief was that NEPA issues need streamlining. Fairly good discussion on climate change discussion. It was also next steps were deferred to receipt of the workshop summary report. But again, a wide range of opinions based by regions, with some regions seeing an acute need to address climate change, some regions not really apparently seeing any impact. The allocation review working group, four issues that were reported to the CCC. There was the summary of it was one of support for the use of adaptive management as a basis for review of management decisions, the need for development of criteria for initiating review of allocation decisions, a determination of issues for consideration and review of goals, objectives, and outcomes of allocation decisions, and the need to enable decision support and review of the goals, objectives, and outcomes. The CCC formed a working group to develop comments on these, and the next step is to report back to at the fall meeting. And the final issue I'm going to talk about, and the commander probably can verify this, but there's going to be a significant drop in available resource hours for U.S. Coast Guard in this upcoming year. There was an interesting report given to us back in 2011. The resource hours were, you know, roughly 109,661, very close for 2011 and 12. 2013, it dropped to 88,000 plus, and in 2014, they're budgeting 47,000, roughly 800. So it's another sign of the economic times. And with that, I'm going to turn over to Tom.
I'll be relatively quick. Most of you know that Oceana produced a report this spring that was critical of bycatch management by the councils and by the National Marine Fisheries Service. All of the councils reviewed that report. We felt that there were a number of inaccuracies in the document. We talked about those. We have prepared a letter response that we will be sending to Oceana. It's in final review now, which documents all the things that we think are inaccurately reported in the report or inaccurately footnoted or in error. At the agency level, I'll be real quick on this one. The agency publishes what are called operational guidelines, which tell the councils how to complete management actions. They have not been rewritten since, I think, 1997. There's been a few things that have happened since then with respect to the law and other things. So the CCC is trying to work with the agency to revise those operational guidelines, and we'll be holding a meeting later this fall. One of the issues that we intend to address is one that John brought up, which is the fact that NEPA seems to be applied differently in different regions. So that's one of the issues we're going to talk about. We're forming a working group with our Habitat staffs to try and coordinate across councils with Habitat issues. And this one thing I'd mention is just to highlight what Terry just said about allocation review. The agency has been pushing the councils for a number of years to have reviews of their allocations to different, of any allocations you make. So whether it's a sector allocation or individual allocations, that these should be reviewed on some sort of periodic cycle. The councils, quite honestly, for the most part, are not real enthused about the idea of having to review allocation battles on some sort of regular basis. But this seems to be something that's coming. There is some language that addresses that in this draft Senate discussion document. As Terry pointed out, we're starting to take a look at what sort of issues should be considered on allocation. But I think that members in the industry in particular are going to want to pay attention as we move forward on this, particularly those in the industry that are involved in any sort of catch share program or any sort of split between the commercial and recreational fisheries.
Questions on CCC? Mary Beth.
Just real quick, Matt asked a comment, made a comment this morning asking about how to link to those documents that were referenced in our report, and I went on the National NOAA NIMS website and to the CCC, and I didn't find it there.
Yeah, I'll send them out.
All right, thanks.
It's on the Mid-Atlantic homepage. I'll send you the link.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Well, seeing none, we are going to transition into EBFM. You ready, Tom?